What is up, Podheads? Back with another episode of the Podio Slate Podcast. And I haven't said that, like, in real time, drink, in quite a while, because we haven't recorded an intro in quite a while. But Anthony, I'm here with you. My name is Tony. Too many Tonys. We're back at it. We've got another episode in the can. Another great interview with another artist that we've never talked to before. A lot of fun tonight. How you doing, man?
And it is night. I'm doing great. We might be a little punchy because we had a first. Mm-hmm. And as we've said in the past, you always remember your first. And tonight we recorded, aside from like Tattoo the Earth and that series, tonight was the first time we did two separate interviews in one night.
Mm-hmm. We did.
What were we thinking? What the hell were we thinking?
Well, I went on vacation last week, so that played into it for sure. First vacation for me in 9 months. I needed it. I got away to Florida, sunny Florida. If you saw our Instagram, I'm sure I posted something about there. Who knows, a gator or two. But we were able to bang out a couple interviews tonight, and one was with Lockie from Alpha Wolf, which is this episode that you've clicked on today, and really fun convo, really cool record coming from those guys here in the near future, April 5th. And I just love being able to do this. And I know I'm a broken record. I know we say it every week, but there's nothing like it. Like, to go from what we were doing 4 years ago today with just you, me, and Nate shooting the shit about COVID or shooting the shit about shows we saw 15 years ago to this is wild. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's the guests lurking around the corner that you don't expect, or it's the legacy artist that you've always wanted to chat with that comes through. In the case of Alpha Wolf, like I do have a soft spot for Australia. It comes up in the conversation. I did spend some time there a few years ago. I love it. Like, I, in another world, another life, I'd probably live there. You know, it's and I'm laughing because we do get into it, and there's some awesome comments made about Australia and the US and whatever. But yeah, Alpha Wolf, a band that I would say came across our radar, I don't know, not fairly recently, but it was the Knocked Loose tour when they toured in the US. Like, I remember seeing the flyer, the tour announcement, and I was like, Alpha Wolf, I've never heard that name. And then you dig into it and they're from Australia, and it's like, oh shit, man, Australia's popping off.
They really are, and it's changed from, and we get into it a little bit with Lockie in the interview here, but it's changed from the bands that probably would have popped off for them from like SoCal and the pop punk and punk world to they're now like a metalcore haven. Like, there's bands like Alpha Wolf, and we mentioned a bunch of them coming up, but that are resonating in America because of the style they play and the energy they bring, and Lockie is no different. Really, really cool stuff.
Yeah, I listened to Lockie on a couple of the interviews. Loved the energy. So when we found out that we had an opportunity to chat with him, it was like, yeah, I want to chat with him. Cool band, cool record coming out. And I think when this episode drops, it will come out in what, another week or two?
Yeah, yep.
Yeah, April 5th, Sharptone. Hey, Sharptone's bringing it. Like, we've had another artist from Sharptone. Again, another label have it a moment. And yeah, they're going out on tour with Amur, Unity TX Chamber in what, April and May, and
next couple of weeks they'll be back in the States on tour, which I mean they seem to be doing all the time, which is awesome. So hopefully we get down to that Boston day, man.
I know, we always say it.
We'll try. We always try.
Yeah, we always try. You went to, you know, last time we said it, you made it happen. So
yeah.
But yeah, Lockie, Alpha Wolf from Australia, Half Living Things, new album dropping April 5th. Sharptone Records. You're going to love this combo. Keep listening.
I'm meeting new people all day. It's fun.
Yeah. Well, and you're, we can jump right into it here. You're, I think in Australia, you might be our fourth biggest country as a podcast, which is cool because we never really thought anybody outside of, you know, little old Maine in the United States was going to listen to us. So the fact that we've gotten some people internationally to hear us and had people like you from different countries on the podcast is pretty wild. Like, we love that we've gone international like this with you. So,
seeing that, like, especially from somewhere so far away, like Australia, like it seems a little bit more than just like trickle of fans, you know, like there's obviously something that Australians are drawn to.
Yeah. We call it Pod Goes International, and we've had, you know, folks from all over the world on. I think this year, the first Australian.
Oh, really?
Shit. I think so.
First one. Yeah. Yep.
Let's go. Nice one. Happy to be here. I'm flattered.
We're excited to have you. I mean, this, it's always been a place that we've thought about, talked about, looked at as, you know, different but fun, and
yeah,
you know, to talk to somebody that knows it so you can tell us all about it, you know. We're excited about that.
It's funny hearing that, because like, I do understand why people say that, but America seems way more fun, like in terms of like fun, ridiculous fun. Like, I fully understand why people call it the land of the free. Like, it's like you got fucking casinos and gas stations.
It's true.
Same gas station you can also buy a Four Loko at.
Yep.
And then get like 14 burritos from Taco Bell for $7. Like, you can't do that in Australia. Like, Australia is cool, everyone's fun, we love drinking beer and partying on the beach and stuff like that, but I don't know, it's just, you guys just accommodate it way more.
Well, I've spent probably a month in Australia. I spent for work in New South Wales, and I loved it. Like, I really loved it. Obviously,
whereabouts in New South Wales?
In Parramatta.
Oh, true. All right, yeah, that's lovely. That's nice.
The eels, home of the Parramatta eels. Yeah,
yeah. Dope, right?
Loved it. Like, obviously, there's some nuances driving on the other side of the street, and you know, you go to Burger King and it's Hungry Jack's. But besides that, I fucking loved it.
Yeah, I don't think it's too different. Like, it's,
I agree.
It's
like, I'm with you.
Same. I just think whatever Australia has, America has in abundance. Like, which probably means there is more bad, but at the same time, yeah, there is also more good. You know, like,
we go to extremes on both of the good and the bad. I would completely agree with that. Yeah,
yeah, literally. Like, yeah, that's a good way to put it. I think, yeah, especially in comparison.
So we were, Tony and I were thinking, like, like, I've spent some time in Australia, and we've had like members of bands that draw very well in Australia,
but they're
more on the punk side. So when did the heavy side of Australia pop off? Was it Parkway, or
it was Parkway? Like, everything. I don't think anybody's done the same stuff the Parkway's done since. Like, and that said, I don't think anyone's even close to it from Australia anyway. I don't know. Yeah, it's so weird because they put us on the map, and now everybody seems to think that Australia is like the be all end all of metalcore. But like,
yeah, it's true. I mean, yeah,
doesn't even, like, bands in Australia are still growing, but I can't even picture another band getting close to Parkway at this point. You know, like,
it'd be tough. It'd be tough.
They will still get bigger, but no one even knew Parkway's trajectory. They were just making it up. People were just surprised every single time, and now we see this. It's just like, who's going to do that again? Yeah, I don't know. It's weird.
But I mean, you guys and Alpha Wolf, and we've got Parkway, we've got Amity Affliction, Speed, Polaris, Northlane, Make Them Suffer. There's just bands coming out of the woodwork from your part of the world that are digging that heavier sound. I mean, when we first started this thing 4 years ago, we had Scott Russo of Unwritten Law, and he, you know, punk, pop-punk world.
Yeah.
That's part of the reason I think that Australia is our fourth biggest market, is they love them some Unwritten Law, but that's a completely different lane than what you guys are in.
Yeah, there's like not much crossover there at all.
No, but now I think that's kind of what's happening. I mean, that's what's coming out of, for us anyway, in America. That's what we're seeing come out that's popular, that's getting people excited, is you know, bands like you guys.
Yeah, it's like honestly strange because it's like, it's that far removed, I wouldn't even know on what the new punky bands in Australia are doing. Like, there's, you do festivals together maybe, but there's no like mixed bills or anything like that. So it's strange that, I don't know, like, especially being in it as one of these bands sort of up there with all the others, it's really freaking hard to say, because I still feel like I'm just making it up on the spot, and I don't feel like any of it's real at the same time.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know. Like, everybody asks me about the scene in Australia and how it's going, and it's like, I probably don't have my ear to the ground as much as I should, but it's just, there doesn't seem to be as much to follow as there used to be anyway. You know, like, it's not as thriving, it's not as crazy as it used to be when everybody said Australia was the best at it. Because I think we've fallen off. Like, I think America is far and away taking over metalcore bands. I just think that the few that do come out of Australia just, like, come out of Australia swinging, because it's Australia. We're so far away. We're so excited to get out of our own country.
Well, I think that's part of it. I think a lot of, like, all the bands Tony just mentioned.
Yeah.
I feel like they're in America a lot, you know, not afraid to tour, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's part of it. It's like, all right, well, you know, last summer there was a Metal Fest up in Massachusetts, and it was like the Australian tour. It was Parkway, Amity, and North Lane.
Yeah.
It was that. It was day one of New England Metal and Hardcore Fest. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like, this is, you know, and I feel like they're here a lot, and you guys are no stranger to that. You guys are here a lot.
No. America is definitely our bread and butter, like, for sure. It's well, that's the thing, like, you do an entire national tour in Australia and it's 5, maybe 7 shows. You do a national tour in America and it's 30 plus, easy. You're there for a month, like, shows every single night. And it costs a lot to get over there as an Australian band, especially if you do it legitimate with visas and everything like that. But then, like, once you're there, like, everything doubles. Our dollar is super shit compared to America. Bands only ever make money on merch. When you're over there selling so much merch, you feel like a t-shirt company, but like, that's like, hey, this is, sorry, I'm rambling now, but I toured with Fit for a King, and they they took us out on one of their first ever American headliners, like 2, 3, 4 years ago or whatever. They've been a band for like 15 years and they only just headlined America, and they are Korean musicians. Like, that is the only thing they do, and they hadn't even headlined America. I headlined Australia like 6 times living at home, like living with my parents, sort of thing. Right. It's a total different thing in America. It's entirely more sustainable.
So let's go back just a little bit. I want to hear how you first kind of started in bands. How did you find like-minded people in a smaller country with 25 million or so, right? It feels big because it's big on the map, but it's less people than, I mean, we have almost, what, 350 million people in America. So you find more people here. How do you do that? How do you end up doing that and then becoming a vocalist, especially of a metal band?
It's like, I don't know, like, I come from one of the more populated places in Australia anyway. So it's not arid wasteland out there, but something like you said, like, Australia has its own sort of like punky fuck you attitude anyway. So I feel like there's always been this weird sort of alternative streak, regardless of music or anything, before I was even into it. Like, there's just a, I don't know, that Australian attitude you imagine when people say Australians are fun, you know? But it's like anything, I think, like, on the internet, like, I heard all the big giant like bands at the time, like A Day to Remember, Bring Me the Horizon, Parkway Drive, like Killswitch, all of that stuff you'd find floating, like digging up on LimeWire and stuff like that. And then I had a friend who, I don't know how he got it from, because we were like 13 at the time. He like knew local bands and shows happening at like community centers and stuff like that. And he showed me this local band's music and I was like, this sucks. This sounds awful. Like, and he's like, playing this Friday at like the Learning Center, and I'm just like, they have shows, like, are they famous, what, like, I had no like scope or anything, like, and I was just like, oh, all right, like, and I had to like beg my mom for like $15 to pay like door at this sort of thing. And I literally think from there I was just like, you can be like this young and play in a band that actually sounds good live. And at the time it definitely did not sound good live, but it did to me. And then, yeah, since there, it's always one dude that's just has their ear to the ground. I don't know how. I don't know where the hell he got his collection of music, because he was the dude.
But were, like, you that dude, Tone? Were you that? Who was that?
No, I wasn't that dude. I think you were that dude. Yeah, that's that why dude. We're still doing this. Yeah.
Yeah, like, I think there were some, like, some local, more smaller record stores that would sell local bands, EPs and tapes and stuff like that. So I think that's where a lot of the underground stuff came up, but I never went. I got it off my friend's USB stick who went and did that.
So you're drawn in. When you're seeing those first bands, are you thinking, I want to be on the other side of this, I want to perform? Or were you just like soaking it in?
Soaking it in, I think. Like, not at that stage did I think, like, I just didn't feel capable or anything. Like, I was like, this, I'm so out of my depth. I'm just sort of like enamored by watching it. And also I was just like, it was the coolest thing at the time to me. Like, I was just like, oh, I'm like going to metal shows on the weekend. Like, what did you guys do? Like, I felt so like there was like this cool secret thing.
It's Fight
like,
Club. We've talked about it. It's, yeah, it was Fight Club. Exactly, yeah. When you're 14,
it was Fight Club for 14-year-old. yeah, and I was sort of just, I think like, yeah, I saw like moshing for the first time, like actual like throwing down. And that was like, I feel like I was more taken by that than actually performing the music. I thought that was way cooler. Like, because like listening to the music, even on like iPods and shit like that, I think I just wanted to thrash around rather than actually be like, how did they make that sound? I want to recreate that. And I think like, it wasn't until like people started toying with the idea of starting bands with zero musical like experience whatsoever. Like we're just a ragtag group of friends like, oh, you should play bass. Like you should do this. Right. Wouldn't this be
sick? Yeah.
And then I think eventually someone actually got a kit. Someone got a guitar. Someone was doing a music class in school. And then everyone just tried a bit of everything. And like everyone was a vocalist. Everyone was a bassist. And then I think I just sucked so hard at everything else. I just kept doing vocals until I was the one who did it long enough that I eventually became the dude at school.
You beat me to it. I was going to ask you if you sucked at everything else, and that's how you ended up being the vocalist. But I mean, come on, man, that's an instrument in itself, and that's a skill. So yeah, don't sell yourself short.
I would rather like max out my stats in this than just be like okay at everything else. I would love to. Like, you have no idea how frustrating it is trying to get my like points across, telling my guitarists like, no, dude, it goes da 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 da. Looking at me like an idiot. It's just like my opinions still matter regardless of what I can do on a guitar,
right,
bro.
Right.
So it was cool for that, but yeah, at the same time it was like it was cool to be the only one that could do vocals at the time, because you know, parents can still appreciate guitars and drums and bass or whatever. It's harder time bringing them around to like the vocals we were doing.
I love that you mentioned just like, we'll stick you at bass. It's like the misfit of the band. It's like the right field of the band. It's like he'll just warm body in the outfield.
Like, why did you think of that? Like, why did I immediately come into your head for that? Which is funny, because if I were to do anything, I would actually love to play bass. Like, they seem like they have the most fun.
Well, because you don't do anything, you just play the changes. You don't have to play in it, just play the changes.
You played the bass for a little while, Anthony, right? I mean, you know.
So Lockie, I played the bass for a couple of years. We did an open mic night in college. We covered Boys in the Well. We covered Terror. My plug got unplugged halfway through the song. I didn't even know it. I didn't even realize it.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So the bass is useless. Basses are useless.
They are useless.
That's funny.
Yeah.
I bet you had fun though, right?
It's fun. You know, I thrashed around up there. There's video evidence of it, but yeah, I think where you ended was the right move. Having heard you,
I love that.
So how do you keep your voice fresh? Because, like, what you do isn't easy. It's not something that you can just, you know, it's not as easy as just talking to us right now, right? I mean, there's some work that goes into that. How do you keep that fresh?
It's like, I don't know. I'm still figuring it out, hey, and I'm still surprised when something bad happens to it. But I just... I don't know. People ask me to do like vocal tutorials or if I'll coach them or anything like that, but I don't even know myself. So much of it is just like an innate feeling. And like, that's one of my biggest fear of a musician is the fact that I might've been doing this wrong the entire time and that I'll wake up one day and just not be able to do it ever again. Because that happens. Like, you've heard of like freaking Mitch Locker, the dude from While She Sleeps, freaking... Who else? So many people have had like a myriad of vocal problems that just starts like the downfall of their vocals. And it's like, not saying those dudes are like totally shot now, but I know they've been through it. See, I don't know. I listen to myself. I say I don't like try to drink too much or whatever, but I don't try to drink too much before the show. Like, I pay attention to what I eat, and it's all encompassing. It's really frustrating. Like, if you slept funny the night before, like, that might affect your voice the next day. Like, if you had too much fried food that day, if you had too much milk, if you had too much caffeine and coffee, it's like, that's what I pay attention to. I think my technique is fine as long as it's not inhibited by all that other shit. So on a tour, I'm just like boring as shit. Like, I'm not like I'm trying to eat well. Like I'm trying not to eat all this crazy stuff or drink or smoke too much. Yeah, honestly, you just try to maintain everything and be a boring motherfucker. Every other vocalist says that too. Like, if you really want to be on your game, you are not allowed to have any fun.
Yeah, we've heard both. We've heard what you've said more frequently, but we've heard both. We're like, no, I'm fine. I just go for it. It's like, you're a genetic freak, man. Like, good for you.
That's the thing. Like, those motherfuckers scare the hell out of me. I like, and they're about too. Like, I think, Brian from Knocked Loose, he doesn't do anything crazy. Like, JT from Era, he just goes for it. Like, and I've spoken with him, and they like we share some sort of details and how our voice works, but just fundamentally something is different there because I could not do that sort of thing. Like, I gotta like not use my voice for a good portion of the day, and I'll warm up really softly, and I'll have like a hot toddy tea or something like that. And,
I'm laughing because like we've chatted with I don't know how many vocalists and. I think it was Vinny from the movie Life from the US here in New York. He was like, guys, no one's having a worse time on tour than the vocalists.
Yeah. And it's shit because no other member in the band will admit it as much as they know it's the truth.
Mm-hmm. Like, right. Yeah.
It's such a thing that's like, lead singer syndrome? I love that. That's the most validating podcast I've ever heard.
Great pod.
Like, it's just vocalists bitching. And it's reaching ears, bro. It's the most satisfying thing ever because, like, you get no sympathy no matter what. Like, no matter what you're going through, no matter how your voice is, it's something you did the day before. That's why it is.
Yeah.
So, I'm glad there is camaraderie out there among other vocalists. But, like,
Well, there needs to be. You need to have, and we need to get the basses together too because I think we just killed a bunch of them, unfortunately.
Union? Do we need to unionize?
We should. We should unionize for the bassist. See, Anthony's out there unplugged, just fucking stomping around.
Mandated load in and load out exemptions and everything.
Oh yeah, I think you might be speaking about the future. That could happen.
I think I'm hitting right now.
All right. So, the main reason we have you on is you've got a new album that's coming out on April 5th called Half Living Things. We have had the privilege of listening to it. It is a ripper. It is awesome. Really, really excited about what you guys have coming forward for you.
Thank you.
Tell us about it, man. What are you excited about?
Honestly, like the whole thing's exciting. Just having a whole new like catalog of songs is what you want. Just knowing that people are out there chewing on a bunch of new material is like the most satisfying feeling as an artist in a band because you always feel like you're on the clock whenever you're not putting out music. Like, I think that if I don't put out music, my fans will forget me sort of thing. So it's like refilling a clock sort of thing, and like refreshing and just being like having another moment, so to speak. It's just a big celebration. I feel like the tours are what I'm most excited about. Like, I feel like people should know what to expect by now from an entire album. Like, there might be some curveballs or whatever, but it's not like there's a particular song that I'm like, oh, I'm really excited to hear what they think about this. If anything, that was Sucks to Suck, and that's already out. So, like, I'm just excited for people to get their hands on it and to see it reflect at the shows.
Yeah, the record's massive. Production's great. It's Tony and I were kind of doing like a walkthrough the other night, and I'm like, banger, 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 banger. It's heavy. There's chances taken. There's absolutely chances taken. You'll know it when you hear it. But it all works. So, like we talked about you guys touring the last few years. I'd like to get into the details. Like, where did you find time to write this? You know what I mean? Because I looked at your tour history on Concert Archives. You're probably familiar with that site. I'm like, when did they write this?
Yeah. That's the thing. We're really bad at writing music. It takes us so long to actually like finish songs and shit like that. But I think from the last album, A Quiet Place to Die, we would sporadically come out with a demo here whenever somebody had time. Mitch, our drummer, started writing a lot of the tracks on it. So I think he was borrowing Sabian's guitar and maybe like an interface off Scotty. So I think he was the first one to start coming out with tracks from it just because like fresh home from tour, he was like didn't have to write and record the whole album on guitar, so he was excited to actually do it. So he had like a month where he maybe just wrote like a whole bunch of bangers. And that sort of kicked, got his ass into gear. But I think next thing we knew, we fucked off on tour again. And we can't really do much. We try to write on the road and think of ideas, but we never really get anywhere. We're far too distracted. So I literally think we, in between all of those tours you were talking about, we would come home, get some more demos together, get some more ideas. And then we realized that was a bit too sporadic and our ideas were like, I don't know, like they weren't that cohesive sort of thing because they were done so apart. And then I think we booked like a week, 1 week together, not to record it, not to like write new songs, but just to sort of be like, what the hell are we doing? Like, what are we doing? What songs are we using? Yeah. Are the songs good enough? Should we change them? Like, we didn't get too hands-on with writing there, but we would just sort of like swap sections out, change layers, and just sort of like be like, all right, is this where we want to go? Sweet. And then I think from then on, everything else just came together. Like, we just need a one like slap in the face to be like, what are we all doing? Because it's impossible.
Yeah, like a reset. A reset. Yeah.
Because it's all through Messenger. Everyone's at home winding down. Like, three people might be down to hear a demo while the other one isn't. Like, while we're all there in the same house, it's just like, all right, we can get everyone's feelings and whatever.
What's the process like for you as far as like writing lyrics or vocal parts? Is the song done first, or are you always kind of putting some stuff together and then matching them?
Like, 9 times out of 10, I'll go completely like blank into a song and then I'll start from there. Or I'm not like a writer. I cannot sit down with a notepad in front of me and just spit out a whole bunch of like lyrics. I can edit stuff, but like, I'm so scatterbrained and ADHD with it. I'll be in a line somewhere and I'll think of like a pattern or a line or one word or two words, and I'll just immediately write it down because I know it has a place to go somewhere in a demo that I've heard floating around, and I'll keep it there. And eventually I'll just sort of bank up ideas. It's almost like a puzzle. It's like a spider web sort of thing. I'll keep thinking of ideas and then I'll be like, no, these ideas belong over here. Let's take this one and put it over here because it fits. Like, it makes no sense, but in my brain and in my notes app, I know what I'm doing until eventually I have like an idea of a song. Like, it's so strange. Like, I can't be like, I'm going to write about this and then write about it. I'll listen to a song and see what that conjures, see what that makes me want to do, see what that makes me want to say. And then I'll add to it and add to it and add to it, add to it. And then I'll be like, shit, this song's about that. Like, I'll know it's going somewhere, but I find it really hard to quantify song titles, song meanings as like one thing like that, you know?
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah.
And that makes sense.
That was a huge ramble, but yeah, I'm like,
it's great to hear the process because everybody's is different. So I want to know yours, you know, like some people are like, I've got a whole book of rhymes. I'm ready to bring that to whatever music it fits. And some people are like, no, I need to hear the music first. And I want to know what. Yeah. And then you're pulling pieces out of, you know, thin air out of your brain to make it work. I love that.
Yeah. It's like, I really wish it was the other way around. I think it would be cool to just have material at all times. But I find that when I do that, it's subconsciously I've married these words to a sound or a vibe. So if I have some, like a bit of music, I'm like, oh, let me go grab these and see if they work here. And it never does. Like 9 times out of 10, it just never fits. And then sometimes it does. And you're like, all right, sick. Like, one time it worked out. So it is good to just have that there in case it, you do get lucky. But yeah, I'm like, none of that really works for me all the time.
I can relate to your approach and thought process to it. Like, if I was a vocalist, I would absolutely need to know the cadence of the song, the heaviness of the song. Like, you know, as far as tracks on this record, like Haunter, it has a haunting vibe. It's a perfect name for the album. I would need to hear that to layer in a theme in vocals. And like, A Terrible Day for Rain, it's got that fucking insane breakdown. And like, that would put me in a headspace as a vocalist, you know?
Yes.
Like, the lyrics to Sucks to Suck would not fit on Haunter. Not even close. No,
absolutely, yeah. And that's like, that's not like a, like, you can sort of put that to any band or whatever, but I try to like, it makes perfect sense in my brain, you know? Like, I need to. That's why, like, I'll have a song and I'll be like, oh, I know what this needs to be about. And I'll have nothing for it. I'll have absolutely no thoughts and feelings for it, but I'll need to write for it. But I'm like, I don't have that right now, but I know it needs to be this. So once I have that, I'm going to get back to it.
That's cool. So you hear it and don't necessarily have it ready, but know where you need to go to get there. That's cool.
Anything that I do have that I am like ready to rip just doesn't fit, doesn't work. Like pattern wise, it could fit, but I'm like, but what about when we get to this part of the song? This vibe is a total change up from what you were saying there. Like that doesn't make sense sort of thing.
So I got a question. When you said you were on that like week, we'll call it a reset or whatever, what came out of that? Was there like, hey, we need to go in this direction. We need this, that. Like, what were the takeaways?
Big ones. I think we nailed down a lot of album titles, song titles in that time. And just sort of quantified the ideas of the songs, because not a lot of lyrics were done at that point either. But I needed, because I think I hit a wall and I needed help. I needed everybody else to be like, I am checked out. I hate this song right now. You do something to it, please. Like, so there was a lot of that going, a lot of like, can you help me with this idea? Because I've checked out. Because we let everybody have a crack sort of thing. And then if they're like, because nobody wants two people working on the same part because then we'll kill each other.
Right.
So we just sort of like, there's a bit of ebb and flow to it and a bit of like passing around the same idea till someone gets something. But I think we had a scratch track for Bring Back the Noise. I'm pretty sure that got like completely finished. That was only halfway done when we brought it there. And I think the back end of Mangekyo wasn't done. And that's why that's so like cowboy and crazy. Cause I feel like we're pretty drunk at that point and we were just like, no.
You know what my notes are for that song?
What's that?
Biggest breakdown on the album. That was my
note. Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Like we recorded that and then literally like just partied to it for the rest of the night. Like it was
nice.
Sick. We were just like, I've listened to that just one section 100 times. Like, but yeah, that was, because that was a fully idea together. And we were just like, is that ridiculous? And then someone was just like, no, keep going. And then it was a perfect vibe of that sort of thing. And it was cool to actually have that in the studio for once, because we're always like away from each other when we're writing.
So I thought you were going to say that meeting, you were just like, all right, guys, how do we get Ice T on a song? Because
that came
we've
later,
been doing that for 4 years. How do we get Ice T on the podcast?
True. No, that came late. That came in like vocal production. That came pretty late in terms of the rest of the album. So we locked all that in, and then I think we started vocals a few weeks after that. And we knew that part needed a feature. We had someone else penciled in for it, and then they bailed last minute. And then we honestly brainstormed for maybe like 10 minutes. We were just like, we literally got an email saying no. And we're just like, fuck, who do we get? And then I think it was super boring. It was a really boring story. It was like emails and lawyers, like nothing too crazy. But we
isn't
just
that
like
what it is, though?
That's life.
You're working with the big dogs, bro. Like I'm not running into Ice T at a bar and being like, hey dude, like.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But I think we just did some math on some of our connections, like management and label and who can we like get to through some like degrees of separation. And then we like did some checking out. We were like, oh, Managed by Good Fight, Every Time I Die. They did a show with Body Count. Boom, Jackie.
Oh, that's right.
And
yeah.
Ice-T's email, and she's just like, I have his manager's number right here, and we're just like, send this to him now, please.
Yes.
She's just a brilliant idea. Let's do it. And then like we didn't hear anything for a while. Then like a few weeks later, they were like, yep, he's keen. We'll send you a contract, a lawyer will hit you up, blah 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 blah. And then back and forth with that for a little bit. And then I think randomly we just had like a file come through an email and it was his part, and we would just say, no way, like no way.
That's so cool. Yeah, that's amazing.
We showed it to Dan from Polaris, and he's just like, sick song, where'd you get that Ice T sample? And we were like, bro.
Come on.
No sample, on. Dude. That's the real deal.
Yeah. I'll say this. That dude, he would be like an all-time guest for us, like wish list guest for us.
Oh, my God.
He could be the coolest dude on the planet. Like, he might be. There can only be one. It might be Ice-T.
Yeah, he's like, it's just a rule of cool with him. Like, he's infallible with it. He could have done anything on the track, and it would have been enough, you know? Like,
absolutely, yep.
The presence alone, you know?
We have a friend of the pod who's been on with us 7 times now, Greg, from the band Zebrahead. I don't know if you're familiar with them. Pop-punk band from a long time ago, but they're still kicking, but he's not in the band anymore. But he told us a story about being invited to a party that Ice-T was throwing that was called the Tea Party. And he's like, we walk into the bus.
It was on Warped Tour.
We walk into his bus, and there's a guy in the top corner just flashing a flashlight to like provide like
a strobe light.
He's like, we knew we made it. We're at Ice-T's bus. This is amazing. The tea party, baby.
Who else was on there? Was that a bum or was it weird? Like,
I can't imagine, man. That was the follow up we missed. We gotta ask Greg who else was on the bus.
Bro, that is hilarious. Holy shit!
Yeah, I've seen Body Count once, and it was on Warped Tour. They did like the 10-year in 2004 big celebration. But like, that just shows he's down. He's down for the cause. Like, Body Count, it's no joke.
That's what was funny, because when we met him at the shoot, we didn't know what the fuck we were going to talk to Ice-T about. And then he, like, first of all, he very quickly, we weren't talking about new music or anything like that. We're just at the shoot talking about the shoot. And he's just like, hey, you guys want to hear some new Body Count? And we're just like,
nice.
All right. And he's like, hey, producer, give me that Bluetooth speaker. Like, and just like hooks his phone up to the speaker and just puts us in demo jail. Like, just starts playing new Body Count, no prompts or anything, and we're just sitting around like, yeah, fuck yeah, just like any other like musician friend would do. And then like once we started talking about that, we started talking about touring, and like, because we were like 5 weeks in at this point, he's talking about how we must be like hammered and stuff like that, ask us what our ride is and like what states we've been to and the venues and stuff like that. And he was like, he remembered some of the venues he played and what it was like rolling in a bandwagon, and it was like, oh, dude, like, you do this, you know this. And it was literally exactly just like talking to another like touring muso, because he is
cool, dude, man. Hey, that's I love that happened, not just because like the end product is out, like sucks, great song, it's out there, go listen to it, but the story behind it is great. And man, kudos to you guys. And like, this album self-produced, which is,
I
know A Quiet Place to Die was not, right? You had a producer for that.
It's quasi self-produced, because it's like, it's mixed and mastered by Lance Prince, who's like, he's done every single one of our records, and he's done hundreds and hundreds of our live shows. He's like the sixth member, literally. So he produces it. We do vocals 100%. Like, that's all Scotty and everybody else in the band. He does guitars and Lance does guitars and drums. But it's like, he's so in with the band, his opinion does not feel like a producer's opinion sort of thing. Like, he's in it just as much as we are. And it's, so in that way, it's not self-produced, but it's all freaking done at home. You know, like, it's all, in-house.
Do you like it that way? Is that something that, or is there like something you'd rather do? Would you rather work with a producer down the next one? Yeah. How does that feel for you guys?
It's one of those things where I feel like I got to, like, I've only ever done it this way. I've only ever done it at home with the guys. Like I said before, my lyric writing style is not built for being put in a room and being like told to come up with something, you know, like, that's what terrifies me, is being like, because I've heard some stories like about just like certain producers and stuff like that, dudes who produce amazing records, but will tell someone to like burn their notebook full of lyrics and start from scratch. Like, you're in the studio writing a record now, start again. And I'm like, brother, no. Like, I would implode, dude.
Well, I heard a podcast today. They were talking about a very famous producer. You can probably determine who it is, that makes the vocalist recite the lyrics to the rest of the band in like in an effort to open up about what the song's about. So the band truly knows, like, it's like a seance. Like, it's a seance before you start recording.
My guess is he doesn't wear shoes.
Not him. It's Lockie saying the lyrics to Sucks to Suck to the group before they record.
That's something.
Well, that's like, dude, that's the thing. Like, it used to be a thing. Like, I used to come into the booth and I'll be like, all right, what are the lyrics? And I'll be like, here you go. And then like run out of the room and like not look any of the guys in the eyes whatsoever. But now, like, this many records deep, there's like so much humility in it now. Like, I literally said, it's the big bad where my dog's at, with so much confidence in my chest. And the guys just had to let me lay it down.
That's amazing.
Like, yeah, we're definitely over that now. But if I had to get in a room with like a producer, that would all restart again. I would be like 10 times more nervous. Like, I've like, one of my biggest problems was like getting out of my head to record vocals, because I can like play a show till the cows come home. The second I get in a studio, I've just forgotten everything I've ever learned about vocals. And I'm like, I've come in and like busted my voice on the first line somehow, and then just the whole day has been a write-off. Like, I'm an anxious wreck recording. So adding another scary producer man is just like not something I'm looking forward to.
But yeah, at the same time, another person in the mix.
Yeah, I think I also think that once we like really run into trouble with producing our own records is when we'll actually look at it. Like, at the same time, we know it can only be beneficial for us. It's almost just like a secret weapon for us. Like, we're reserving ourselves for that. You know, once we start plateauing and getting bored with our own music, we'll be like, all right, let's step out now.
Yeah. And I mean, that's fair. And you're self-aware of that, which is cool. So like, you're not there yet. You guys are making great stuff. This record's awesome. Half Living Things coming out April 5th on Sharp Tone. Is there anything on the record that you're like, holy shit, we did that?
I see. Easy. Like, nothing really comes after that. There's other songs that I'm like individually stoked on, because I'm like stoked on how like the lyrics came across, or like just personal like little boxes I like to tick off in my songwriting, like things. But I honestly think you can't really top the Ice-T thing. That's I'm so surprised when we finished the record anyway. Like, I think writing a record is the hardest, scariest thing ever. And when we get to the end of it, I'm like, oh, thank God. Like, I can't believe we did that. So it's weird. Yeah, we're sort of just like striving to finish it and like be happy with it, rather than try this like grand thing, you know. We're not there yet.
Well, I think people are going to love it. It comes out when this drops, it'll come out in about a week, right? Yeah.
So it's April 5th. And this April is on 5th. Monday, right? Yeah.
So you guys have a big US tour.
Hell yeah.
April and May. Amure.
Yeah.
I'm a big Amure guy from way back. Yeah, I love them. Chamber and Unity, some big rooms. I was looking at the list in Boston at the Paradise. The Paradise is huge. Like, the Paradise, maybe 800 to 1,000 cap. Like, these are big boy rooms, is the punchline here. Is that like, what is that like? Do you feel pressure? Or do you feel
terrifying? That was that was not our idea whatsoever. We wanted to do like a whole like step down sized rooms, but this rendition is actually a step down from what bookers and promoters originally pitched us. And we had to be like, what the fuck are you doing? But apparently they believe in us or whatever. So that's like cool, I guess, but it's also freaking terrifying.
900 cap. The Paradise is nine. Imagine 900 people in front of you right now. Like, that's a lot of people.
Don't make him feel more. I mean, he's excited enough.
Bostonites as well, bro. That's a tough crowd.
It can be, yeah. And I mean, kind of the birth of metalcore, I think, kind of comes from this, the Northeast region where we grew up, where we're from.
Yeah.
So you'll have some eyes on you that have heard it, that have seen it, that want to know what you've got for them.
Because Buffalo's not near there, is it?
It's in a similar, it's probably 4 hours, 6 hours from, probably six hours from Boston.
State's over.
Yeah.
Okay. For some reason, I just associate those two places together because it's where I'm scared most of the people, because of the bands that come from those places.
Oh,
that,
yeah.
That's fair. I hear that.
You go there and you can see it in the room sort of thing. Like,
so yeah, every time I die and buried alive and, yeah, then Boston, it's like...
Yeah, kill switch.
The who's and, who. Yeah, and, yeah, yeah, just go down the list.
Yeah, so they definitely, like, are expecting some, like, hard shit there. So we do what we can. But the, yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, it's a Muir, too. Like, we're there, but it's also freaking a Muir. So that's why I'm less, I get scared, and then I just remember. I'm just like, actually, no, things are going quite all right. This is going to be a freaking blast. Like, I just, yeah, it's scary. It's just because there's so many. Maybe if there was like half the amount of shows and they were that big, I'd be way more confident, because we just like, we sold out an Australian tour. That was like 5 shows. That was easy sort of thing. This is a whole different situation.
But you're right. It's a big bill. Like, it's not just you guys. You're going out with the Muir, you're going out with Unity TX Chamber. It'll be fun. It'll be exciting. And I'm sure the people in Boston by halfway through the first song are like, yep, those guys are cool. We enjoy this.
We're into it. Yeah, we've spent some time there. They should come back.
We got one last question for you, and it's a quick hitter, and it's kind of funny. What's it like? What's it feel like to go viral? You guys went viral on like Yahoo with the Wall of Death stuff. Like, let's close this out there. Like, tell us how it was.
Every time we go to America, something dumb happens that Lamb gets a hold of. Man, I swear to God, I honestly like. It's sick. I love it because it's just more attention, more fun. But at the same time, whenever something happens like that, I just get anxious. Like, I just, all of a sudden there's all like this spike of attention, and I'm a nervous, anxious dude as it is, which is funny because I am. But whenever it's like not unwanted, but unprompted attention spike from something else, I just get a bit like shy and sheepish. But like, I don't know. Like, I just think we keep getting lucky, honestly, as fucked as the Wall of Death was, like, eventually that seems to work in our favor, because like, I don't know. I've literally never seen anything like that in my entire life.
Oh, it's wild.
The breakdown was very obvious. It was very clear when to go in.
Yeah. They should have known. Those people should have known.
Definitely comes down to like a generational divide there on that one. But yeah, I don't know. I love it. I love any like attention, positive or bad, regardless. I just, as long as it's never like too bad. It's like the merch cut thing. I'm sure you guys saw that when I went off at that bench. Like, that was the biggest one. And that one really pissed me off, because I was just like, oh, I haven't been prepared. Like, I had nothing. Like, everybody was just like, petition this. Like, let's rally. Let's get rid of this. And I was just like, so not ready for it. Like, That's what I wish I could change about going viral, is just like, I wish I could actually prepare for it and capitalize on it rather than just being like,
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Like, sometimes you just don't know. And, but you're right though. It's good. It's publicity for the band. And hey, anytime you can make headlines that aren't, you know, something like the Wall of Death, which isn't a big deal. It's funny. It's a good time.
Yeah.
Good for the band. People get to hear who you guys are and laugh at the people that don't get where the breakdown is. Like, come on.
It only happens in America too, which is funny. So I'm always excited. I'm always excited for the next thing that happens whenever we come to America. So
I'll leave you with two things. One, I love your energy. I'm a bigger Alpha Wolf fan than ever right now. And two, I'm drinking a spiked Dunkin' Donuts coffee. Yeah. So
Northeast baby.
Yes. So that's America for you. That's the punchline.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I'm like, what alcohol is in that? What is it spiked with?
Who knows? Don't ask questions.
Another thing I have about America is just vague mystery alcohol that is somehow 20%.
Yeah.
No rules, baby.
Like I said, we're a bunch of idiots over here, so
no, I back it. I'm excited to get back there.
We may get down to that. I don't know.
Yeah.
We're 2 hours away from the Boston gig, so we may try to make that happen. Yeah. We'll see.
Let us know. Talk to the PR guy, Tim. Was it
Tim? Tim's a good dude. We'll talk to Tim.
Hell yeah, we'll hang out. Bring some Dunkin' Donuts. Spike.
We might spike our own coffee. Who knows?
Just go to the local packy. You'll get it.
I need all the dumb American shit.
We can find you some, for sure. All right, Lockie, we got the new record coming on April 5th, Half Living Things from Alpha Wolf. Excited to talk to you tonight, middle of the day for you, late night for us. And yeah, man, we're excited for all that's coming for you guys.
Hell yeah. Thank you very much, man. Thank you for having me. It's great.
Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you for listening to Patio Slave. We are at Patio Slave on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, all of the places that you can find us on social media. Facebook, Patio Slave Podcast, YouTube, Patio Slave Podcast there. Email us at patioslavepodcast@gmail.com. And hey, if you want to become a supporter, click on the link at the bottom of the episode and give us $1, give us $5. It keeps the lights on, keeps us going. We really appreciate that stuff. Thank you.